This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Safely turned it over. David Perron's got a breakaway. He'll hustle in. Perron toward the front of the net. Perron a backhand shot. He scores. David Perron wins it in overtime for St. Louis. As Winnipeg turned it over at center. And David Perron, the leading scorer for the St. Louis Blues, will come through and get a huge goal for his team. They've now won 7 in a row. The final score, the St. Louis Blues 5, the Winnipeg Jets 4 in overtime.
The Jets tied it up 4 times, but they couldn't get the all-elusive goal in overtime. The St. Louis Blues win their 7th game in a row and are 12 points ahead of the Winnipeg Jets. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, universe. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. Drew Mandel is away from the program this week. Dave, I'm a little under the weather, so you're going to have to bear with me. I'm taking one for the team today. What a game last night between the Jets and the Blues. The first of 4 meetings between these two teams. This time last year, the Jets and Blues had already finished their season series. And coming out of that holiday break, the Jets had lost their last game 6-2 to the Montreal Canadiens. You weren't really sure what you were going to get from either team. You thought it might start off a little bit slow, and it did start off a little bit slow for the Jets, but they were able to tie that game up late in the first period. And as I mentioned, they were able to tie the game up 4 times. Got a good show coming up for you today. At 9:30, Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press is going to join us to recap the Jets-Blues game. Obviously, Dave M. and I are going to break down the entire game, and we're going to have Stephen Wino at 10 o'clock of the Associated Press to talk about those Red Hot Capitals. They won in overtime yesterday. TJ Oshie. I'm wearing the War Road shirt. That, of course, is TJ Oshie's company. And then at 10:30 a.m., we're going to be joined by Lou Korak, St. Louis Blues correspondent for the NHL.com, because we've got the Jets and the Blues coming up in, what, 25 hours?
Yeah.
28 hours?
Something like that.
We've got the second game of an unbelievable game last night, as I mentioned. And, you know, we have to start off with the Jets' ability to come back in that game, because in the second period, I mean, at one point, I think the shots were 14-3 for the Blues. Mm-hmm. In the first period, I thought the Jets were the better team. I'm not saying that the Blues weren't good, Dave, but, you know, the goal that Kyle Connor scores to tie that game up in the second period, yep, just a real nifty goal. And obviously, you know, Patrick Laine does a lot of the heavy lifting, you know, brings the puck into the zone. And, it was just a real nice shot. It looked like, you know, there wasn't a lot of room, but, you know, we know that Connor can roof that puck. And I think Binnington, you know, wished maybe that he was a little bit more upright and he would have had a better chance. But, you know, just overall, what were your impressions in that game? We'll get into the game as a whole. We'll start to nitpick it a little bit. But what were your overall impressions of that game? Because, you know, it looked like, you know, with, you know, 4 or 5 minutes left in that third period, it looked like the Blues were going to get the clean 2 points. But obviously, Nikolaj Ehlers makes a nifty little pass to Blake Wheeler, and the Jets get at least a point in that game.
Yeah, you know, it started off, obviously, 1:10 in. You see the Blues score. It was a bit of a soft goal from Justin Falk. So you thought to yourself, okay, this is going to go that way. You know how hot St. Louis is. You talked about it. They'd come into the game winners of 6 straight games. And they're a team that's just as good at home as they are on the road. They had equal records. I think they were 12-4-3, both home and away. So you knew this is a team that can play well wherever they are. They're defending Stanley Cup champions, which I think for the Jets is probably a good thing. I mean, it probably got their sights focused. I mean, this is a team that they know is playing extremely well, and the Jets know how tight everything is. I mean, if you look at the standings, you look at all the teams, Nashville, Minnesota, Dallas, they're all just points behind Winnipeg, who are currently obviously in a playoff spot. So you know how important that game is. You know you've got a home-and-home series. You know you've got Colorado on Tuesday. So from a Jets perspective, you couldn't afford to have a poor game. And you know, sure, Connor Hellebuyck has been all-worldly for this team, but he can't be that way every night. And we saw that pretty much on the first couple of goals from St. Louis. So the Jets team needed to really kind of get it going for him. I thought, you know, Mason Appleton looked like he was playing a pretty good game. He had got his legs really going in that on that first goal. Nice play by Josh Morrissey to hit Lowry in the neutral zone. Lowry saw Appleton, and Appleton basically got started. He wound up essentially, you know, deep in the Jets zone, and got going into the neutral, saw Lowry. Lowry spotted him, and real nice opportunity for that breakaway chance. And Gabriel Bourque credited him for finishing it off. So I thought that you were getting contributions across the board from the Jets. And I thought that the compete and the quote staying in the fight was good for the team, because again, this is probably one of the best teams in the NHL, and you were able to stay with them throughout the contest.
I just love the way the St. Louis Blues play as five-man units, right? Like, I said this last week, you weren't on the show, Dave, but I said this: the Carolina Hurricanes were probably the most skilled team that I'd seen, and I don't think I was the only one. The most skilled team that's played at Bell MTS Place this year. And when it comes to the Blues, I think that was just the most structured, best structured team that I've seen this year. And, you know, give the Blues a lot of credit. I mean, they haven't lost a game in regulation when leading after two periods. And you wrote about this on the site. The Blues are just as good on the road as they are at home. Like, this is a team that rarely has a bad game. And, you know, with all due respect to Zach Galifianakis, there's no hangover for the St. Louis Blues. No Stanley Cup hangover, of course. I can't get the joke out properly. But, you know, the point is the Blues are just as good as they were in last year's playoffs, just as good as they were, you know, during the second half of last season. You know, you mentioned Mason Appleton. He picks up his first point of the season, you know, playing on that third line with Adam Lowry and Gabriel Bourque. And, you know, that pass by Adam Lowry, I think, I mean, it was a good stretch pass by Josh Morrissey, not just a good pass, a really nice pass, but that little subtle pass, knowing that Mason Appleton has speed, and give Appleton credit, you know, he comes in with speed and he puts Jordan Binnington out of position. Gabriel Bourque gets to that loose puck, and obviously it was a really good shot, but I thought that that was maybe the best game that we've seen from that third line. And let's be honest, I mean, the Blake Wheeler line was not great last night. Yes, Blake Wheeler ties the game up in the third period, but it was really the Shifley-Connor Lyonnais line that from puck drop till the end of that game was the best line. Yes, of course, you know, Shifley, you know, turns the puck over to David Perron in overtime, but I mean,
that's Jets killer, David Perron.
Well, it's unbelievable. He did it with Vegas.
Yeah.
He did it with Edmonton.
Yeah.
And he's obviously doing it time and time again with the St. Louis Blues. But, you know, David Perron's a great player.
And I think that was his fourth overtime goal of the season already. So it's not just Winnipeg he's doing it to.
No, he's an NHL killer.
Yeah.
Right? But, you know, on the topic of that third line, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, the upcoming games. You know, we know St. Louis is coming up tomorrow afternoon, but you've got Colorado on New Year's Eve, but you've got Toronto and Minnesota coming up after that. So you've got more Central Division teams coming up. I mean, they're going to need this third line to be contributing. I mean, the fourth line, you know, they weren't bad yesterday, but I don't think you're going to expect a lot of offense from that fourth line. So with Andrew Kopp, Matthew Perreault out of the lineup, sure, there is a chance that Matthew Perreault comes back either tomorrow or Tuesday. But I think maybe the best, what you take from this game, in addition to, you know, tying the game up four times, scratching, clawing, getting that bonus point, I think you take from this game that third line probably looked like you want a third line to look like.
Yeah, I think that I think this is a team that's treading water, though. I think ultimately you don't want Gabriel Bourque on your third line. He's better suited for that, you know, fourth line role right now. And I think if you're the Jets, you know, you have to play the Seinfeld get well soon for Matthew Perreault, because and we heard from Coach Maurice that he said essentially that after morning skate yesterday that Matthew Perreault was expected to be. Was trying for that Montreal game, and then it was interesting because he said he was trying for that much. He wanted to push for that Montreal game, and then said, "Well, this is what he said. He said Matty got through his skate today. The next would be full contact with the group tomorrow. If he can get through that, then we'll start thinking about it. But we have to get through that feeling really good. But he's in the time now that we'll start considering him. I think he was probably pushing for the Montreal game. Well, he didn't play in that for me. That takes him out of this game, so I didn't consider him for today. And then we'll go forward from there. Which I think is interesting that they considered him for a game 4 days ago, but after 4 days of rest, they still haven't. But I guess obviously they wanted him to play, have a practice, full contact with the team, and that sort of idea. So I think if you can get Matthew Perreault back, maybe we'll see, because their Jets are practicing today at 12. That could augment some things. I just think like that you're not getting enough from that third line. I look at it and I think to myself, like, you know, Adam Lowry, almost kind of the beginning of the season when Adam Lowry looked like a man on an island by himself. And I think that you can't have that. And I think Mason Appleton's been, you know, I thought that was his best game. I thought of the season. I think he knows that he's got to start contributing. He can't just have anything. And he's a hard worker. Don't get me wrong. I don't think he's just expecting anything to be gifted to him. But I just think that you need more production. You can't just have a third line that's treading water. So from my point, you just need Matthew Perreault back, because he can just boost it so much. And we know you're not getting Andrew Kopp back for still for some time.
Okay, so we know Matty Perreault's coming back eventually. It could be tomorrow. We talked about it. It's going to be probably within the next week. And as you mentioned, Andrew Kopp is still, you know, a few weeks away. Brian Little, really, he's out indefinitely.
Yeah, it could be at least a month, I think.
Right. It could be a month or longer. So when Matty Perreault comes back to the lineup, I think, you know, it brings up something interesting. Obviously, you don't want to overthink it, but you assume that Matty Perreault goes back to that third line. Gabriel Bourque is bumped down to that fourth line. You probably keep Mason Appleton on that third line, and then who comes out of the lineup? Is it a Jansen Harkins, or does Jansen Harkins, you know, go back to the Manitoba Moose? What happens there? Because I agree with you. I think even though that was probably the best performance that we've seen from this incarnation of the third line, right? So we're talking Gabriel Bourque, Adam Lowry, Mason Appleton. Adam Lowry is the only real constant here because, you know, as we talked about, Kopp and Perreault are out of the lineup right now. So Lowry has been the mainstay there, but to me, it makes the most sense to have Matty Perreault on that third line. Then you have a little bit of an offensive scoring punch. So I think that things are going to get better for the Jets. And I really do think that yesterday's performance was impressive, because for anybody that watched that game, I wasn't at the game. I'm under the weather, as I mentioned. I was watching the game in bed with, you know, a big glass of water and some Tylenol cold and sinus. You were at the game, Dave, but you know, that was a very impressive game against one of the best. The St. Louis Blues are second in the entire league. So this Blues team, it's not like they're just a good team. Like, this is one of the best teams in the league.
Elite.
I'm not saying that the Blues are going to necessarily repeat as Stanley Cup champions. I wouldn't be surprised. But for the Jets to come out with that type of performance, they were really good in the first period. Sure, there was a little bit of a lull there in the second. The Blues, you know, they had their push. And, you know, we haven't talked a lot about, you know, the going goal by goal. But, you know, that Alex Pietrangelo goal, I still don't know how that goal goes in. Obviously, Pietrangelo's a veteran and, you know, Hellebuck would like to have that one back. But the two Tyler Bozak goals, those are nice goals.
Yeah, the power play one was really
right?
Nice.
Like, well, but Betetto, I mean, you know, it just, he blocks the shot and it goes right to Bozak. And then the goal that was scored in the third period, just a really nice pass by Robert Thomas. Tyler Bozak puts it in a place where Connor Hellebuck just doesn't have a chance.
Yeah.
So the third and fourth goals were not his fault. And then obviously the overtime winner, that was a breakaway, you know, David Perron backhander, really nice move. So Connor Hellebuck probably had, you know, three goals that he couldn't have stopped. Two goals he'd like to have back. He didn't have his best game. And that's going to lead nicely into our next segment, where I kind of want to explore this topic. And Scott Billick of the Winnipeg Sun wrote about this. You know, how long can the Jets really maintain their place in the standings when they're being routinely outshot, outchanced, and Connor Hellebuck is stealing games for them and putting up, you know, 920, 930 save percentages? So I think this is a big point for the Jets, and obviously you'd like to get the 2 points, but going into the game tomorrow against the Blues with the Avalanche coming up, the Avalanche lost yesterday to the Wild. The Wild are only 2 points back of the Jets. I think if the Jets would have lost that game and didn't you know, not get a point and kind of, you know, wither away there in the third period, I think the fact that they tied that game up with, you know, whatever it was, 60 seconds left,
like 114, I think.
Yeah, 74 seconds left. I think that point is huge, and you're going to need every single point you can get this year.
Yeah, and I agree. And you know, a lot of times, especially like in the last few years, when the Jets have been down in a game, you never felt that they were out of a game. And last night, I really wasn't sure. Like, you know, I was thinking to myself, like, you know, they've shown a very good doggedness to stay in the fight. You know, I've used that twice now already, but like, it's true. Like yesterday, they were able to answer, you know, and sure, a lot of times, like, you know, they would score and then, you know, you'd see, you know, 5, 6, 7 minutes later, St. Louis would regain the lead, but the Jets didn't wither, to use your word, and I think it's a good one. I think that they managed to stick with one, like you said, Ezzy, one of the best teams in the NHL, and one of the best, and you made this point earlier, and it's a point that's worth making. That's the structure that St. Louis plays with is so phenomenal, and they really are such a, and they're doing it without Tarasenko, right? And they're such a good team that you look at this and you think to yourself, there are very few flaws. So the fact that the Jets were able to maintain the game and stick with the Blues, I think it's a good sign. I think it's also a good sign that, you know, they were able to get back and tie the game and send it to OT. And the truth is, actually, they could have won it with, I think, well, 40 seconds left. Kyle Connor had a chance. Pucks bounced on them. They did have a little bit of bad puck luck in the game, because there were a number of times Josh Morrissey had the puck bounce off his stick, or bounce over his stick, I should say, at least three times in the game to my count. So a couple of situations where the Jets could have had chances, and in overtime too, you know, I thought there were a couple of opportunities. So, you know, a really good game, could have gone either way. And again, to your point, I think really critical to get that at least 1 point out of the game.
Dave, we're going to head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the advanced statistics and how the Jets are still having difficulty with generating offense, and obviously shots against. The stats say that the Jets are giving up more shots and more chances. And we're going to talk about, you know, obviously Connor Hellebuck is having an excellent year, but we're going to talk about, you know, if it's fair that the Jets can continue to rely on Connor Hellebuck, and, you know, going forward, if that's going to be a problem, especially with the schedule that they have coming up against some of these really good teams, such as the St. Louis's, the Colorado's, and the Toronto's. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Now for Schwartz, back toward the line for Volca drive. And oh, look what I've got. Connor Hellebuck reaching out, spearing that, and hanging on for a stoppage.
Zuccarello into the Jets zone. Backdoor play. What a save. Connor Hellebuck with a blocker stop on a bang-bang play with Zach Parise.
Put it back toward the line for Volker. Slap shot right on. And doing the splits and spearing that again with a glove is Hellebuck, and he'll hang on for a whistle.
We're back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. It's the two-man crew. Well, it's actually the three-man crew, because we've got producer Shawnee Asor here. Mindell is enjoying some family time away down south with the family. Drew will be back, of course, next week. Next week, we've got another 7 o'clock show. Dave, you weren't on the program last week, but we were up bright and early.
Yeah, not me.
7 o'clock to 10 o'clock next Saturday, because, of course, there's another Jets Wild 1 o'clock afternoon game in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm starting to feel it a little bit, I'll be honest, during that first segment. You know, this cold, this virus that has swept the city.
Yeah,
it's been unbelievable. I was telling you, Dave, on the way here, I've got two sick kids at home. You know, my wife has been sick. Basically, everyone in my family has been sick. My sister, my dad, everybody. I'm starting to feel a little bit. It's a short show. We've got the World Junior pregame show. We've got Team Canada versus Team Russia. Puck drop is at noon. But, of course, the pregame show across the TSN radio network is starting at 11 o'clock a.m. Central. That's why it's a short show for us. What an opening game on Boxing Day, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Alexis Lafreniere, I mean, if anybody had any doubt that he was the real deal, I mean, this guy is going to be an unbelievable NHL player. Whoever ends up getting him first overall or second overall, because some think that Quinton Byfield might go first overall, but right. I think most scouts agree that Alexis Lafreniere is going to be the first overall pick. But what a goal. And obviously, you know, a terrible giveaway, and you don't like to see that for the Americans. So Team Canada versus Team Russia right after us with the pregame show. And then at noon, that's when the puck will drop in the Czech Republic. Also, shout out to Denis Bayak, doing an excellent job over in the Czech Republic, as he always does for the World Junior Hockey Championship. And obviously, you know, Munzee's covering for him on TV. And then our boy Kidder is in the booth there with Paulie Edmonds on the radio broadcast. This segment of the show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the whole family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So Les is in Hawaii right now.
Really?
Yeah, so hopefully Les is tuning in.
I would imagine. It's 4 hours behind. So
a little bit nicer in Hawaii than it is in Winnipeg right now.
It's currently 5:21 in Hawaii, so we'll see. Yeah, so we'll see if he's...
I don't think Les is listening. So, Dave, this segment, I want to talk about the under... We're going to get pretty deep here into the numbers. EvolvingHockey.com and Natural Statric. We're going to go into the numbers, and I'm not trying to paint a really dark picture for the Winnipeg Jets, because...
You don't have a paintbrush right now.
Well, so far this season, though, you know, let's be perfectly honest. The Jets' top six and Connor Hellebuck's excellent goaltending really is the reason why the Jets are third place in the Central Division right now. I think you would agree with that, right?
That's a fair statement.
I mean, you're not getting a lot of scoring from the third and fourth lines. I'm not saying that the third line or the fourth line hasn't been good, because I think when Andrew Kopp, Matthew Perreault, and Adam Lowry are together on that third unit, it's a very good unit. And Andrew Berkshire in the Winnipeg Free Press actually had an article today talking about that third line and how when Andrew Kopp and Matthew Perreault come back, that's when he thinks the Jets' advanced stats will start to really improve when it comes to shot metrics, for right? Sure. Okay, so the point of this segment, we're going to talk about the advanced stats, Connor Hellebuck's numbers, and how concerned you are coming up, especially during this stretch against St. Louis, against Colorado, Toronto, Minnesota, and so on. The Jets go on the road. I want to know how concerned you are and if you think the Jets are going to be able to hold on to a playoff spot, you know, when we're talking about this, you know, a month from now. According to evolvinghockey.com, the Jets are dead last in the NHL when it comes to even strength expected goals per 60, so 2.03 goals per game. The Jets are third worst in the NHL when it comes to even strength goals against per 60 minutes at 2.64. And by the way, these numbers are entering last night's game.
Right.
So the numbers have not changed that much.
Right.
I mean, obviously the, you know, the expected goals for would go up a little bit because the Jets scored four goals yesterday, two of which were on the power play. But so according to Natural Stat Trick, the Jets have the second fewest high danger scoring chances in the league and give up the second most high danger scoring chances against. Okay, and by the way, this is, again, was entering last night's game. Now, Connor Hellebuck's save percentage this year is .926, which is second in the league amongst goalies who have played at least 20 games. Only Darcy Kemper has a better save percentage. Connor Hellebuck's goals saved above expectation, that's a stat we talk a lot about on this show, first in the NHL at 15.86. You only have a few goalies that are close to him. Ben Bishop is one of them. And Darcy Kemper's up there. So Connor Hellebuck basically is the best goalie in the league right now, according to the save percentage and the goal saved above expectation.
Yeah, I mean, it obviously decreased a little bit yesterday, but.
Right. But the Jets are creating very few high danger chances and they're giving up a lot. Now, my question again, I'll repeat it to you. Based on all of this, and this is something that, you know, has been talked about a lot, but I think it's very important when you consider the strength of schedule. Now, the strength of schedule, this came out on NHL.com recently. The Jets have the third hardest schedule in the entire league for the second half of the season,
right,
or just over the second half of the season. So you're talking about the next, you know, what, 43 games or 44 games, however many games are left. I can't do math right now.
Yeah.
So with all of that, keeping that all in mind, keeping that the Jets have a tough schedule coming up in the short term and the long term, how concerned are you that, you know, it continually seems like the Jets are giving up more chances and Connor Hellebuck seems to be bailing them out?
Well, I mean, I think all of the numbers that you just read as you have to be disconcerting, right? And you can say, well, the Jets use a slightly different metric, and Palmer's often says that we have a different internal measurement than what's publicly available. But what's publicly available sure seems to indicate that things aren't particularly going well, with the exception of the way Connor Hellebuck is playing. And, you know, Connor Hellebuck has been, and it's interesting because Connor Hellebuck, you know, deflects and always says, talks about his team and doesn't really want to talk about, you know, his play. But I mean, but for the way he has played this season, there is 0% chance that the Jets team would be anywhere close to a playoff spot if it wasn't for Connor Hellebuck. And so you can say whatever you want, but like when you talk about those numbers, and you talk about the high danger chances you're giving up, and you're talking about the high danger chances that you're not getting, I mean, those are impactful. Now, you could say, and it's not untrue, that the Jets don't right now are relying on two lines to get all their offense. And it allows teams to really key on and try and shut those down. And when you have an inability to roll, you know, four lines or even three lines and have an expectation you're going to get production, well, then that makes it a lot more difficult for your top two. So we're not seeing the necessarily, I mean, Patrick Laine started to heat up over the last little bit. I mean, obviously he was producing and his gameplay this year has been excellent, but you're just not seeing it across the board, right? You're not seeing, like, Mason Appleton has played, I don't know what the exact number is, I think 24 games this season, and yesterday was his first point. And you just simply can't have that. And Adam Lowry hasn't been producing. You know, and again, that's not all on Adam Lowry. I mean, he hasn't exactly had line mates who have, he hasn't had Matthew Perreault the whole season. He hasn't had Andrew Kopp. So you give those guys, as Berkshire illustrated yesterday in the Free Press, you know, you give those guys some extended time together And maybe you've got a difference because, look, Paul Maurice has shown a tendency to really rely on his top lines to give him the production. And obviously he's defaulted. He hasn't really, been able to rely on lines three and four to really produce. And they really haven't. I mean, what do they have combined? Like Logan Shaw has two goals. Gabriel Bork has two goals. Mason Appleton has zero. Jansen Harkin has zero. He's only played three games now. Adam Lowry has what? Three goals a season? So, I mean, like, where's the production? You're not getting it from the third and fourth line. So to me, Connor Hellebuyck, I mean, you can say whatever you want. Is he going to come back down to earth? Well, why would he? He's played 31 games so far this season. He's shown you what he is. He's an extraordinarily capable goaltender who can handle the workload. And so I think Connor Hellebuyck playing at this level will continue. I think the question for the Jets is, what's going to happen with their defense, right? Like, and that's a big question, of course, as well, which, we're talking about eliminating some of these high danger chances. And, there's obviously a big question mark with Dustin Byfuglien. You've got Dmitry Kulikov, who was playing better hockey this year. He's out until, I think, the All-Star break. Sami Niku, we now know, is 100%. That's a good sign because I think really in terms of helping with this team with offense, a player like Sami Niku is definitely going to help. He talked yesterday after the Moose practice. He practiced in a full jersey. He said he was 100%, and he was pretty funny. He was pretty Sami Niku yesterday talking about, asked about his confidence. He said he's confident. And he's confident. And he was asked about playing for the Jets. And he said, I think I could help if called upon. So I think, you can get a guy like Sami Niku. That's going to help your team out. I mean, defensively, let's be realistic. Sami Niku's, a wonderful skater. Defense isn't his primary focus necessarily. But, the Jets could use some help in the offensive category. So I think that could help.
I can't wait to see Sami Niku back in a Jets jersey. I can't wait to see him back in a Moose jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just been, as you've talked about before, it's like a Tucker Poolman situation last year,
mm-hmm.
right? Where he just can't seem to get any luck.
That's right.
Right? And so Sami Niku, I do think, can have an impact both on the Moose and obviously, hopefully, the Jets. The reason why I put this in the show plan, Dave, is mm-hmm. because I'm a big Connor Hellebuyck guy. Yep. I think all Jets fans are big fans of Connor Hellebuyck, and I don't think you're going to find any hockey fan that's been watching the NHL this year that's going to say that he isn't a Vezina candidate right now. I think he's the Vezina favorite, but I'm just going to give you his last six games, and obviously the outlier is the shutout against the Minnesota Wild, but right. Connor Hellebuck's save percentage in his last six games, .879, .906, .783, .875, obviously, one is against the Wild because he had the shutout, and then .857 yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So my point is the Jets have lost four of their last five games, and Connor Hellebuyck has not been the usual .930 save percentage right. Connor Hellebuyck. So yeah. I'm not saying that Connor Hellebuyck is in this big slump and he's going to struggle for the rest of the season, because I don't think he will. I would expect him to play very well tomorrow afternoon against the Blues. All I'm saying is, when Hellebuck's save percentage and he doesn't make, all the stops, and he that's only right. allows yeah, no, one I think goal or fair. Two goals, the Jets, I think, margin for error we've seen is very slim. We've seen it against Montreal. We've yeah. seen it against Carolina. We've seen it against Chicago. So I think it's something to monitor, because with the games coming up against the Blues, the Avalanche, the Wild, the Leafs, and then you've got that, that tough road trip on the East Coast where you've got Montreal, Toronto, and Boston. I mean, it's a really tough stretch coming up for the Jets. They're obviously going to need Hellebuyck to be really good. They're also going to need Lauren Brossoit to be really good.
That's right.
We're going to head to break now. We're going to have our good friend Mikey McIntyre on the show on the other side of the break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
The two-man crew.
Oh, yeah.
Dave Manuk.
Two live crew.
Ezra Ginsberg having a good time here. Drew Mandel is away from the program this week. He will be back next week. We're going to be on 7 in the morning before that 1 o'clock Jets Wild game.
Maybe you will be.
Let's head to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by our very good friend of the Winnipeg Free Press, Mike McIntyre. Season's greetings. How was your holiday break?
Hey, guys, it was good, albeit maybe a little too short. Almost wish they'd get an extra day or two off, and I'm sure the players actually probably wish they would as well. It's got to be tough for guys that maybe want to fly home and see family, given you know, that they played on Monday, and guys who fly out, say, Tuesday morning, they're back on a plane by Thursday afternoon. Of course, I didn't fly anywhere. All the family's here in Winnipeg, and it was good. Lots of good food and fun and lots of laughs. And now back to reality. And in this case, that means lots of travel coming up. I'm on the road with the Jets later today, starting in St. Louis, and the next two road trips, which kind of come in rapid succession. So going to get a lot of road cooking, I guess, coming up here in the next few weeks, which maybe isn't the worst thing for the Winnipeg Jets. They seem to play better on the road as of late.
Now, Mike, you have really been racking up those air miles. You've been on the East Coast, the West Coast. You know, you've been everywhere this year. You're about to jump on a plane and, as you mentioned, head to St. Louis for tomorrow's afternoon game between the Jets and the Blues. We obviously have to start there because that was an epic game last night between the Jets and Blues, the first meeting of the season. We talked about it during the first segment. Kind of different than last year. The Jets, of course, started the season against the Blues, and they'd played their four games, you know, by the Christmas break. What was your kind of overall takeaway from that game? Because obviously the Jets would have liked to get the extra point in overtime, but, you know, Blake Wheeler ties that game up, and it just seemed like the Jets would not quit last night.
Yeah, you know, you can almost look at that in a couple different ways, right? If you're maybe a positive person, you say, well, that's a pretty good point the Jets got against the Stanley Cup champs, who are one of the elite teams in the league. And the Jets certainly showed true to their form and true to their motto, a lot of fight. They stayed in the fight, you know, to erase four different deficits, 1-0, 2-1, 3-2, and 4-3. The 4-3 one in the last minute and a half there with the goalie pulled. I mean, that showed some fight. And, you know, in that sense, it's a pretty good point to get when maybe they otherwise would have come away empty-handed. I suppose the glass half full way of looking at it is, you know, they probably in some ways should have done a little better than they did. I mean, to fall behind four different times, Connor Hellebuyck, a couple of those goals were ones that he would absolutely want back. The penalty kill let them down again with what looked like a pretty critical goal in the second period, late in the second, by Tyler Bozak. And then the overtime, I mean, that was a pretty ugly play by Mark Scheifele to sort of give the puck away as he did to David Perron, who made no mistake. So, I mean, you could break it down and find some things which weren't very good and say, well, geez, if they don't do that or they don't do this, that's 2 points, and a game that the Jets probably could have really used 2 points, especially with the schedule that sort of looms on deck now. But, you know, in that sense, it's kind of a microcosm, isn't it, of what we've seen from these Jets lately, where you're never quite sure what to expect. They've had some really good showings. They've had some really poor showings. And I'd suggest yesterday's game had a little of both within the 63-plus minutes that got played. But the end result is they do get a point, and that's certainly better than an outright loss would have been. And, you know, the Jets are not exactly in a comfortable position right now with so many other teams kind of breathing down their necks in the Western Conference playoff race, but at least the 1 point maybe gives them something positive to try and build on, especially after a real ugly game against Montreal before the break. I think there's a lot more you could take away from last night's game than you could in that game against the Canadiens, where the Jets pretty much no-showed the whole game.
You know, Mike, we've been detailing how good Connor Hellebuyck has been all season, but he's faltered a little bit of late. And as he and I just talked about it in the last segment, and I saw a tweet you put out last night about his last six starts. So are we seeing Connor Hellebuyck come back down to earth, or is this just a blip? Well, how do you see his play of late?
Yeah, I mean, if not for that 31 save shutout last Saturday in St. Paul, those numbers would be even uglier, wouldn't they? But the fact he got that shutout tells me that, you know, I think that's more true to form of what Connor Hellebuyck probably is, and that it's probably more of a blip on the negative side than anything else, and I don't think it's something to be overly concerned about. However, there are those who will say that this was bound to happen eventually, that with the defense in front of him and the way the Jets have played at times in front of him, that Connor Hellebuck was bailing out his team more times than not, and that this is just a regression that was almost inevitable. And it's not so much to put on Hellebuck, that this is just more like what you're going to see from this year's Jets team overall. And there may be some truth to that. I mean, Connor Hellebuck was playing absolutely lights out for most of the season so far. And, you know, all the staff would suggest that he was, that it maybe wasn't entirely sustainable, not necessarily at the pace that he was at. So maybe a bit of a drop off was to be expected. So the key now is obviously going to be to find a way to still scratch out some points, scratch out some wins, even on nights when maybe your goalie isn't playing like a Vezina finalist, as Hellebuck has looked so many times this year. And I guess in a sense, they did that last night. The Jets, you know, kind of bailed Hellebuck out a little bit in the same way that Hellebuck has bailed them out so many times this season.
Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline. And Mike, I got to give you credit. Obviously, you know I'm your biggest fan, but you had a really good long-form piece on Josh Morrissey, and we got to talk about it because you go back to his days in junior and talk about when he was drafted back in 2013. We were there in New Jersey, the famous Gary Bettman. I think you're going to want to hear this trade between the Devils and the Canucks. And obviously, you know, Max Domi, it looked like, might be drafted by the Winnipeg Jets, but of course yeah. He went to the Coyotes. And you know, as you talk about in the article, and I recommend for anybody who hasn't read it, they should definitely read it. You know, Morrissey has turned out to be an excellent draft pick. And, you know, the question that I have for you in a year in which the Jets have had so much turnover on defense, losing Jacob Trouba, losing Ben Chiarot, Tyler Myers, obviously the situation with Dustin Byfuglien, you know, there's Josh Morrissey last night playing 26 minutes again. You know, just how impressive is it that he seems to just be the glue that continually keeps this Jets defense together?
Yeah, it has been this year. And you know, he's mentoring, I don't want to say young defensemen, because I believe Tucker Pullman might actually be older than Josh Morrissey, but a more inexperienced blue liner in Tucker Pullman that Morrissey has kind of taken under his wing. And you know, Tucker has told me countless times this year just how much playing with Josh Morrissey has meant to him. And I think you could say that for the blue line as a whole, that Josh Morrissey, I mean, it's almost frightening to think what the blue line would look like without Morrissey if he had gone down. And of course, he did have that brief injury earlier this year, that when he collided with a teammate in warm-up, I believe that was the third game of the year out in Long Island, ended up missing two games. And fortunately for the Jets, it wasn't anything long-term. But yeah, he's always been a guy who I'm fascinated by his story, because unlike a lot of other first-round draft picks by the Jets, who, you know, I think pretty much from the time they were drafted or shortly thereafter, people could see that it was a real win-win for the Jets. Morrissey, if you'll recall, and I document a bit of this in the story, I mean, he took a bit of a longer road, and he played that full season in the AHL, which came after he had made a brief cameo with the Ice Ice Caps back when they were still in St. John's, that Calder Cup run that St. John's had, where Morrissey, still a junior player who joined the Moose or the Ice Caps, at the end of his junior season, made a real impact. That's when they went all the way to the Calder Cup Finals, lost to Texas. Morrissey went back to junior the following year, and then it was only after that he turned pro and spent the whole year with the Moose. And there were people, I remember, people were ready to declare him a bust because there were some struggles there. And I talked, as part of my piece, I talked to Keith McCambridge, who was his coach in the AHL. I talked to Dave Manson, who was his coach in junior. His father as well, Tom Morrissey out of Calgary, who has played a real big part in Josh's life and hockey development. And so it was interesting to go back and get some of that insight from, you know, what they were seeing and saying at the time, and how it is that he's now turned himself into a real premier defenseman who may put up, you know, he's going to smash his career high in points this year. He's on pace to get more than 50 points for the Jets this year on the blue line. And of course, he signed that long-term deal now, 8 years, $50 million. He's made the long-term commitment to the Jets and vice versa. And he really is the guy that they're building the defense around. And so it was, to me, he's a guy, he's not only a great hockey player, he's a great human as well. And I wanted, to document some of that in the piece, and you sort of see where he gets it from with his family and who he's had as his role models through his career. So it was a fun piece to do, and I always like to, to find out more about these guys that we watch every day, and what makes them tick. And in Josh Morrissey's case, just an all-around great individual, and it was fun to tell his story.
Mike, if we cast our eyes to the AHL, the Moose got a bit of good news yesterday when Sami Niku was practicing in a regular jersey. He hasn't played since the game on November 27th when they were in Milwaukee, got knocked out in the second period. And he said, he's talked about how he feels 100%, he's ready to go, and he wants to help either the Moose or the Jets. So I ask you this. The Moose are playing the Ice Hogs tomorrow at 2. They play them on New Year's Day, Eve, or during the day, but of New Year's Eve. So how soon do you think it is before Sami Niku is back in the NHL?
Yeah, great question. And so let's assume that, and knock on wood here, because he's had just a miserable time staying healthy this year. But if he can stay healthy and, play all the games that are on the schedule upcoming here for the Moose, I would think that he's probably 3 weeks or so away, that they would let him get, acclimatized back to the speed of play. The big question, of course, will be, well, whose spot is he taking? Well, right now, I mean, the Jets are carrying three goalies on their their roster. That's not going to last. We're not sure exactly what they're going to do with the Eric Comrie situation here, but they would have an open roster spot. I think, though, if you're bringing in Sami Niku, you want to play him. And I just think the way the Jets have been going as of late, the status quo, when you have a dynamic, young, puck-moving, smooth-skating defenseman like Niku, who I saw Pascal's comment yesterday, when he said, he does things for our team nobody else can do. Mm-hmm. Well, you can make the same argument, actually, that he could do that for the Jets as well. So I think it would be foolish not to at least give him a shot to see how he would change the look of your blue line. And in that sense, I think he probably plays in the minors for a couple of weeks. And then I think you have to give him a look. I really do. I mean, unless things are going so well for the Jets, but looking at their daunting schedule on deck here, I think it's safe to say the Jets are going to have some real challenges coming up. And it might be the perfect time to bring a guy like Niku in and see what he can do for your dynamics.
Mike McIntyre is with the Winnipeg Free Press. Mike is going to be on the road in St. Louis tomorrow covering the Jets and the Blues, 2 o'clock puck drop. You can, of course, read his work in the Winnipeg Free Press. Mike, we always appreciate your time, and just wanted to remind you that you are one of our last guests of the entire decade. Hey. So I just wanted you to know that you should feel very honored.
I can't wait to get the plaque.
All right. Thanks again, Mike. Happy New Year, and enjoy the game tomorrow afternoon.
You bet, guys. Talk to you next decade. Take care.
All right. Sounds good, Mike. All right. We're going to head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
Chicago. That one gloved down by Erickson. Builder to head now. And Nyquist. Oh, my. He's run into by Boland. Right back ahead comes Seabrook with a shot. He scores!
That, of course, was Brent Seabrook's big OT series winning goal over the Detroit Red Wings. Remember, that was when the Detroit Red Wings were in the Western Conference.
Yeah, I love those days.
People forget about that. Because that, of course, was not the Stanley Cup final. That was in the, was it the conference final? I think it was the conference final, but regardless, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor, Drew Mandel is away from the program. This is going to be a quick segment, Dave, because we've got our very good friend Stephen Wino of the Associated Press coming up at 10. We're talking about Brent Seabrook because obviously the news came out earlier this week. I think that was 2 days ago or 3 days ago that both Brent Seabrook and Calvin DeHaan are going to be out for the season. And if you haven't heard this yet, and you've been living under a rock. I feel like with my cold, I have been living under a rock, but Brent Seabrook's going to have surgery on his right shoulder and his hips, whereas Calvin DeHaan is going to have surgery on his right shoulder as well. And Dave, this is a big surprise when it comes to Seabrook. Calvin DeHaan, Stan Bowman, the Hawks, Jeremy Colleton, they were expecting that Calvin DeHaan was going to be out for the season, but Brent Seabrook was recently a healthy scratch, and he wasn't with the team, so it was a little bit uncertain. But this announcement that comes now in late December that he's going to be out for the season, the Hawks won yesterday, by the way, but the Hawks are last place in the Central Division. You know, it's going to be very difficult for them to get into the playoffs. They're going to have to go on some St. Louis Blues crazy run to get in. But, you know, just wanted to bring this up during the show because, you know, we know that Brent Seabrook's got 4 years left on his contract. And obviously, he's a guy that's been talked about in trade rumors, a guy that might be even bought out. When you first saw this news, did you think that this was maybe the last that we've seen of Brent Seabrook as a member of the Hawks?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because to me, a guy who needs the surgery, you don't think anything of it. You think, okay, well, that's what he needs. But oftentimes, these guys will play through it. And you know, Mark Lazarek in his piece in The Athletic talked about how had the Hawks been in a playoff run, they would have probably pushed through, and which is crazy just to think about the level of pain these guys have to endure, that he's like the things that he needs surgery on. And it's like multiple surgeries that he would have just played through it. So I really do wonder if it was one of those types that, remember, fans might remember when Evander Kane, you know, was playing through some things here in Winnipeg and then, of course, decided to have the surgery, which and then was traded subsequently. But so I didn't know if that played into it. And you wonder, because Seabrook had been a healthy scratch for a number of games, obviously was displeased because of the fact that, you know, he is an NHL veteran, you know, 1,100 plus games under his belt, all for the Chicago Blackhawks, obviously. So here's a guy who's very proud of who he is, of what he has been throughout his career, and suddenly he's been a healthy scratch consistently on, you know, a last place team. So that's got to be tough for him, and you do wonder if that plays into it, but ultimately you just have to assume this is for the best for him, for his long-term future. But does it mean it's the last we'll see of him in a Chicago Blackhawks uniform? I would tend to think it probably is. I would think that the team is probably, you know, like to your point, there's a number of things that they could do. And so I don't know. I just see it. It's hard to see the situation changing. Now, of course, he could go through the rehabilitation and feel great and come back a completely different player. So you never know. You never want to say never, never, never say never, because we don't know what's going to happen. But it just seems less likely at this point today.
We mentioned Brent Seabrook makes $6.87 million a year. Calvin DeHaan makes $4.5 million a year. Of course, he's got 2 years left after this year, whereas Seabrook has 4 years left. Mm-hmm. So the Chicago Blackhawks are actually going to have $11.4 million in available cap space. And I think this is going to be really interesting to watch this team, because, you know, what came to my mind when I saw this, and you know, going back to Seabrook's future, I kind of agree with you in the sense that I think, you know, when he comes back, he's going to be, what, 34 years old, 35 years old. It means he's on the back nine of his career. Mm-hmm. I do think, though, if rehabilitation goes as planned, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. that Brent Seabrook might be able to play at least a couple of more seasons. Maybe he's not able to play all four seasons, but maybe he's able to come back, because as we know, you know, over the course of his career, he's been relatively healthy. And, you know, I was looking at his games played, and I knew that Seabrook had played over 1,000 games. But mm-hmm. when you combine regular season and playoffs, he's well over 1,200 games. I think he's at 1,237 games.
Yeah,
something like that, yeah. Right? So when you're talking about the amount of games that he's played, both in the regular season and the playoffs, mm-hmm. we know all the cup runs that Chicago's gone on, all the playoffs, the three cups in 6 years, and all of that. I mean, Brent Seabrook has been an integral cog, and he's been healthy for all of that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't fault him at all. I don't think this is at all like a Marian Hossa situation. So those comparisons, I think, are ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a guy that needs surgery.
Yeah.
We talked about it. He's getting surgery on both hips and his shoulder.
Right.
I mean, this is a guy who has a lot of miles on him.
That's right.
He needs to take care of himself. And yes, Chicago has the cap problems. It's an albatross. Mark Lazarus, as you mentioned, talked about this in The Athletic. Brent Seabrook is absolutely not a $6.8 million defenseman.
Right.
He's probably more like a $2 million a year defenseman. But they gave him that contract after they won their last Stanley Cup. It's not his fault. So hopefully, you know, I'm hopeful that Brent Seabrook is able to come back and, you know, he's able to finish his career. We'll wait and see, because it is tough to come back from those types of surgeries. But I do think it's going to be very interesting to see what the Hawks do with that cap space, because I do think they could take a bad contract from a playoff team, or at least a team that thinks they're going to be a playoff team, and they could, you know, turn that into draft picks. So I think Stan Bowman is in a pretty good position.
It's interesting, right? Because this is a position we're used to seeing the Arizona Coyotes in,
yep,
where they have the cap space, they have the ability to take a bad contract and get some assets as a result. And so if you're Chicago and you are looking at your place in the Western Conference right now, and you're thinking to yourself, we're not that far out of it, but the likelihood of us making it isn't significant, you know, maybe you're thinking to yourself, okay, I mean, obviously we're still a ways away from the deadline, from the trade deadline, but there's still that thought process. And I agree with you, Ezzy, you know, why not accumulate assets, get that opportunity to take on a couple of players, maybe a prospect or two, or draft picks, because this is, we know 2020 is going to be one heck of a deep draft.
And, you know, no Calvin DeHaan, no Brent Seabrook, but the Hawks did beat the New York Islanders 5-2 last night, and they recently beat the Jets. So the Hawks are going to be able to play that role of spoiler for the rest of the season. We're going to head to break now. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Stephen Wino of the Associated Press. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Halfway through the program, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave Manouk, Ezra Ginsberg, producer Sean Asor. This segment of the show is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve and home of the delicious Illegal Curve sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family owned and has been serving quality homemade food since 1985. For their full menu, visit bernsteinsdeli.com. Let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by our man, Stephen Wino of the Associated Press. Stephen, season's greetings. Thank you for joining us, and you will be our second last ever guest of the decade.
I'm incredibly honored. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. And, you know, we're going to talk about the Washington Capitals, and they're in first place. They won yesterday in overtime over the Columbus Blue Jackets. And the only question I have for you is, why aren't more people talking about how well the Capitals are playing, Stephen? Because it just seems like the Capitals are in first place. Ho-hum. That's where we expected them to be. But no, that's not how it should be.
No, and it shouldn't be, when you consider that. Look at all these other teams that have won the Stanley Cup and how much depth they've lost in the process. Chicago was able to win the Cup three times. L.A. was able to win it twice. Pittsburgh twice. But you see over time just how guys leave, and you wind up trading draft picks and prospects, and the pool starts to get more shallow. And it hasn't happened for the Capitals. And we know it's going to someday. That's the realities of a salary cap world. But Alex Ovechkin, 23 goals about midway through the season at age 34. Nicholas Backstrom still in his prime. Braden Holtby, who's probably going to unrestricted free agency this summer, having an excellent year. Ilya Samsonov, rookie goaltender, looks like the future and everything the Capitals hope for. John Carlson, the fact that we're getting to John Carlson now, maybe a 100-point season and a Norris Trophy. I think the Capitals enjoy winning and not being the focus of attention, though, because there have been so many years where they've won the President's Trophy and they've been the best team in hockey, and it's felt like pressure, like you're the team to beat to win the Stanley Cup. And because they've won it already, and because there are other stories out there, whether it's the coaching situations, the Maple Leafs getting on a roll, the Blues on a big winning streak, the Lightning not quite being where everyone thought they'd be, the Capitals are in a good spot where they're collecting a bunch of points that if they hit a lull at any point, they've got a big cushion. And as long as they're building their game correctly from now until playoff time, it's going to be fun to see this team's progression from now until April, May, and maybe June.
You know, Stephen, you just mentioned Braden Holtby, and I wanted to kind of ask you a follow-up question on that, because Nicholas Backstrom, of course, is also a pending UFA. You mentioned you think that Braden Holtby is going to leave and test the UFA waters, but when it comes to Nicholas Backstrom, what kind of contract are we looking at here, and how have the Capitals been able to not let that be a distraction this year, because you're talking about two really significant players?
Well, Nicholas Backstrom, the fascinating aspect with that is he no longer has an agent. He's going to negotiate his own contract. Backstrom 12 years ago with his mom on the 13-year contract he signed. And that's what's kind of left this maybe wide open, in that this could be a 5 or 6 year deal. This could be an 8 year deal. So Nicholas Backstrom has been playing on a team friendly contract for the last several years at a little over $6 million a year, way under market value for him. The Capitals know they're going to pay him. Maybe they save a little bit by signing him for 8 years, and he winds up just finishing his entire career here. He gets to 40, 41 years old, playing in Washington, gets his number retired. But I think it's not a distraction, because on the Braden Holtby side, there's no player, I think, in the NHL more capable of handling this situation, this knowing he's in the last year of his deal, no talks ongoing, and kind of focusing on one stop at a time, focusing on the process. That's how Braden Holtby won the Vezina Trophy, how he won the Stanley Cup. That he's fine doing that. The team is fine doing that because they know they have a succession plan. And with Nicholas Backstrom, I don't think there's any doubt that he's back next year. I don't think there's anyone in the organization with Nicholas Backstrom or anyone who thinks there's a chance Nicholas Backstrom is playing anywhere else next year. What the number comes up as, what the years come up as, remains to be seen. But Nicholas Backstrom will be playing with the Capitals next year. He will finish his career with the Capitals. And I think that's something that brings a comfort to the entire situation.
Steven, just under a month from now, the All-Star Game will be taking place. And the Metro Division captain was Alex Ovechkin, but he announced yesterday that he's decided to skip it. I'm sure the team loves that because he'll be rested. But what do you think the reaction from the NHL is going to be? I know you had an article up about the topic, but do you think that there'll be much reaction from the NHL, or do you think they're going to try and allow it to just kind of play out because they don't want to upset one of their big stars?
Yeah, you know, I don't see a whole lot of outrage over this one. When Alex Ovechkin skipped the All-Star Game when he was suspended back in 2012, maybe a little bit bigger of an issue, but he's 34 now. He's gone to the All-Star Game 7 times already in his first 13 seasons, skipped the last two now. That it's hard to say to a guy, we want you to win a Stanley Cup, we want you to be at your best in the playoffs, and then criticize a decision that would, in theory, give him more rest for that time of year. And that's where, not that the league wants guys like Alex Ovechkin to set a trend where everyone's skipping the All-Star Game, but there's reason why, based on his body of work, what he's done for the league, what he's done by going to All-Star Weekend so many times, that he's going to serve his one-game suspension. John Carlson can take over as the Metropolitan Division captain in that 3-on-3 tournament, and we can all move on with our lives.
Stephen Wino of the Associated Press joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. And Stephen, I wanted to ask you about Ilya Kovalchuk. There were some rumors earlier this week that the Washington Capitals might be interested in Kovalchuk. And obviously, you know, the numbers would have to work. Kovalchuk's contract has been terminated by the LA Kings, and we obviously would not expect Kovalchuk to be making, you know, I don't know, more than $1 million a year. But do you think that there's any chance that the Capitals would be interested in Kovalchuk? For that matter, do you think any team in the NHL would be interested in Kovalchuk with maybe all some of the baggage that he carries?
Other teams, yes. The Washington Capitals, no. And unless Ilya Kovalchuk is a right shot defenseman who can help them in their top four, no. I don't see any reason why this would be a fit, other than the fact that they have Russian players on their roster. This doesn't make a whole lot of sense. The Capitals have their top nine forwards in place, and Ilya Kovalchuk at this point of his career is very much a power play and offensive specialist. Capitals have plenty of those guys already. They've got Alex Ovechkin with that one-timer on the power play. They've got Jacob Vrana, who can do a very similar thing. TJ Oshie, Tom Wilson, even a Carl Hagelin, who doesn't have a whole lot of scoring touch at this point of his career. But those are all guys who are better than Ilya Kovalchuk right now. A team like the Boston Bruins intrigues me a little bit there, just because they're looking, with Carson Kuhlman out, at having five real top six forwards and eight top nine forwards right now, potentially. And there are teams that maybe could say there's some value on the margins for adding an Ilya Kovalchuk. Maybe a team like Tampa, if the Lightning continue to struggle like this, it would fit. Maybe a team like Florida, same sort of situation. But I don't see the Capitals being interested in Ilya Kovalchuk. They have a plan. They're up against the cap already. And at this point, they probably need more help on defense than they need a forward.
Well, speaking of the Capitals defense, Stephen, we have to ask you about John Carlson because he's just having an absolute monster season. He's already matched his goal total in all of last season in 39 games. So what has been going right for him? And I know he's tried to deflect all the Norris talk, but I mean, I can't help but think that he is right now the front runner for that award.
Oh, he's a front runner. And it's fascinating trying to talk to guys around the league about what John Carlson has been doing well and got a chance to speak to Kevin Shattenkirk last week, who played with him briefly in Washington. He said he's so good at making the breakout pass out of the defensive zone. And when you have such skilled teammates, that becomes a secondary assist. And he's good at jumping up in the rush. He's good at not necessarily leading the rush, but he's that support there where he moves the puck into the correct places for really skilled teammates that they're finishing and the points are piling up. And he's got a great shot from the point on the power play, just a great shot overall, even at even strength. But because he's able to know when to jump into the rush and join the attack, and you got to give Todd Reardon some credit for this because his system has changed a little bit this year in his second season as head coach, that he's having the defenseman be more active in the offense, and it's helping John Carlson feel more freed up to do that. And he's a great player. We've known he's been an elite defenseman for a long period of time. He's kind of added the defensive snarl to his game many years ago that's helped him become a top pairing number one guy. But because of Todd Reardon's system, because of John Carlson's instincts of where to go skating and where to go with the puck, it's allowed him, because there are so many talented forwards he's playing with, to put up a lot of goals, a lot of assists, and probably should win the Norris Trophy.
We're joined by Stephen Wino of the Associated Press on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. And Stephen, we wanted to get into some other teams, but there's just so much to talk about with the Washington Capitals, first place in the league with 59 points. And, you know, Brendan Leipzig, he's a good Winnipeg boy. So we wanted to ask you about him. This is his fifth NHL team now. You know, he's played on the Leafs, the Golden Knights, and he's coming from the Kings. I'm forgetting a team in there. I think the Canucks is the team that I missed though. He's played every single game so far for the Capitals. Is this just a situation where that Brendan Leipzig has just found the right line mates and he's found the right role? He's playing with Nick Dowd and Garnett Hathaway there on the fourth line. Is this just a perfect situation for Leipzig? Because he was a guy that really kind of struggled to find a permanent role with all the teams that he was previously on.
Yeah, and I wondered about the signing too because of just what you had mentioned. Like, he had bounced around so many times, you think, okay, maybe he's a fringe NHLer, but it has been a good fit. And he brings the Capitals and Brian McClellan wanted to change the look on the bottom six. They wanted to have a little bit more grit and maybe less scoring, but more of kind of controlling the puck and controlling play. And Brendan Leipzig fits into that. Just like Carl Hagelin, not a great finish in terms of scoring, but he can skate. And when you've got a guy like Garnett Hathaway, who's also tough and can play like that, Nick Dowd or Travis Boyd in the middle there, it's just worked out incredibly, and Brendan Leipzig is a guy that, yes, later in the season, we see him as a healthy scratch every once in a while, and Travis Boyd going to the lineup, sure. But when the Capitals are healthy, when they've got all their top nine guys in place, and Brendan Leipzig is able to play somewhere in the neighborhood of 12 to 14 minutes in a fourth-line role, it's perfect. It has worked out probably better than I've expected for Leipzig in Washington, and it's a mix of the system, it's a mix of line mates, and I just think he feels comfortable. I think he feels trusted by the coaches, by Scott O'Neill and Todd Reardon. But he feels like he can play his game. He doesn't have pressure to score, to put up a whole lot of points. He goes out there, he works hard every night, and I think that's where he's felt comfortable, and it's worked out well for him and the Capitals.
You know, Stephen, you touched on the Braden Holtby situation and Ilya Samsonov a little bit, but like, how is the dynamic with those two? I mean, it's got to be a little bit awkward. You've got a guy who's in his, you know, UFA in Holtby, and Samsonov, the 2015 first round pick of the Capitals. He's obviously in his first NHL season, but it seems to be working, but it obviously is a situation that could have not worked. So how have they made it work?
I do think it's a little awkward, actually, because, and Braden Holtby has said, look, I'm not mentoring this kid. This is not Papa Bear and trying to bring along a young goaltender. It is Braden Holtby is doing his job and playing the games he wants to play, and he wants to play League 2, but probably going to play closer to 55 games. And Ilya Samsonov is getting the chance a lot of times in the front half of back-to-backs, because Braden Holtby likes playing the second half, to kind of develop with goaltending coach Scott Murray and kind of figure it out as he goes along. It's almost, they're teammates, but it's not like they're helping each other, if that makes sense, mm-hmm. in a way that's not cold. That these guys are fine with each other. They play when they're told to play, but they're not really worried about, say, competing with one another. They're not really worried about kind of talking things out and trying to help figure out things in each other's game. I don't think there's a whole lot of that there. They're just guys who play the same position. Ilya Samsonov had a great game against Columbus last night. He's played very well in stretches. He's had some kind of rookie mistakes along the way, but these guys are working it out because this is the situation they were dealt. The Capitals knew going into the season what it was going to be. And as far as those guys being professionals, it's worked out.
Stephen Wino is the national hockey writer for the Associated Press. Stephen, you're one of our all-time favorite guests. We always appreciate you coming on, and we are honored that you are one of our last guests of the decade. So on behalf of Dave and Drew, I wish you a happy new year, and we look forward to talking to you in the new decade.
Same to you guys. Talk to you next year.
All right. Take care, Stephen. All right, we're going to head to break. When we come back, Dave and I are going to talk about our top moments of the 2010s. Dave's going to give me his top three moments of the 2010s. I'm going to give you my favorite stories / moments of the 2010s. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
5 to go for the third time in 6 years.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. Big thanks to Stephen Wino of the Associated Press for joining us. This segment of the show is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all of your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. All right, Dave, we've only got a few days left here in the 2010s. We've got 3 days left.
That's it.
You have your New Year's plans?
Yeah, it's called hanging out with the Manitoba Moose at 4 o'clock, watching them battle the Rockford Ice Hogs, and then home. Maybe eat a little Tony's pie
bed,
and then
bed by 8:30.
No, Jets are playing.
Watch the ball drop.
No, the Jets are playing. No, I never do that. The Jets are playing at 7 o'clock. So I'll in Colorado. So I'll be watching that.
I was
game
sending you up there because I knew that you were going to be at the Moose game, and I knew that there was the Jets.
Yeah,
it's Avalanche game.
I've got a nice little Tuesday night planned.
What a beauty New Year's Eve game for Jets fans. Jets and Avalanche.
Well, and you know what? I mean, to be honest, yeah, I actually hate New Year's. I think it's so annoying, and it's just a waste of time.
We're older now. Like, we don't have to worry about that. Like, back in the day,
yeah,
remember when we used to go to the Pyramid?
Anyway.
And you'd have to make plans. Like, you'd have a pre-drinking location.
Just catching
and
a cab at the end of the night.
You'd have to arrange cabs and everything like that. I used to always forget my jacket at the Pyramid, by the way.
That's a real shocker.
I bet young people don't even know about the Pyramid, but the Pyramid used to be the
hot
spot.
Nothing makes you sound older than when you say young people.
Yeah, it's true. Well, I'm older. I'm 37 years old, Dave.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not, you know, young.
A little gray in that beard.
Yeah, no, lots of gray. This segment, we're going to talk about the decade, the 2010s, our top moments. Obviously, it's impossible to really, you know, break it down to, you know, three moments or three stories. Mm-hmm. But, you know, because we only have so much time here in this segment, I want to get your three top stories of the 2010s. I think I know what one of yours is going to be. We're from Winnipeg. It's a Winnipeg-based hockey show, Manitoba-based hockey show. So I think we got to start with 2011, the return of the Winnipeg Jets. We started this radio show in 2009. Mm-hmm. We moved over to sports radio in 2010 from Red River 92.9 Kick FM. And obviously, Dave, you know, we have to start with that because 2011, you know, it was such a long time without NHL hockey in this city. And then that announcement comes from Mark Chipman, May 2011, that the NHL was returning to Winnipeg, that True North had purchased the Atlanta Thrashers. So I'm assuming that that's one of your top three stories of the decade.
I think it has to be. I think, you know, Bill Daly being on this very radio show talking about how people aren't mentioning the Atlanta Thrashers was, to me, a game changer, because I remember at that time in 2010, we were so focused on the Arizona, I think they were the Phoenix Coyotes still at that point. So we were so focused on everything that was going on, drama in the desert. I mean, I had a daily column up every day on illegalcurve.com.
The Goldwater Institute.
Oh my God. Jets watch, the clock. You know, like, it was just everything about it was
thank God that's over.
Yeah, but it, you know, it's funny actually, because I was actually going through some old pictures yesterday.
What was the judge's name?
Oh.
Remember that old Arizona judge?
Yeah.
Or, I know, it was a city councilor.
Yeah. Going back and thinking about watching those city council meetings. And then you have to remember when Atlanta became part of it. Then there was the Balkan. Remember the mystery Balkan
Atlanta
guy?
Atlanta spirit, all that.
Yeah, everything.
I think at one point Tom Glavine was going to buy the team.
I'm not joking. I had to call him up on about
Little John was going to buy the team.
I had the players involved both in Arizona, and it was like a lexicon of all the people involved. And it was like crazy how many hits that was getting.
Did you bring up Little Logan?
I haven't brought up Little Logan yet. No. So
Shout out to Little Logan.
Yeah, no, that was definitely it. In terms of a specific moment for me, it definitely has to be that first exhibition game. More than the game against Montreal, the home opener, the regular season opener, I actually thought the biggest moment, and it's funny because I said to a friend of mine, asked me, you know, they were doing their ticket draft. He said, which game should I go to? I said, go to that first exhibition game. They said, an exhibition game? I said, trust me, the building will be electric.
Yep.
And then what happens? The building was electric. I mean, it was palpable. The feeling inside, we were obviously in the press box, but the feeling in the building, you could just, it was palpable. I mean, there's no other way to describe it. It was a phenomenal, phenomenal atmosphere.
Jets got a standing ovation during warmups.
Yeah, it was, I mean, just the elation from the folks in the building. It was so pure. It was so natural. And then what happens? Dustin Byfuglien runs over Brandon's Matt Calvert.
Hammer time.
And then he hit, some obscure guy. I can't remember. Not Kulak, but it was something like that. Played a few years in the NHL. And then.
Was it Kubalik?
Kubalik. That's it.
Right.
Thomas Kubalik, right? Yeah. He was a Czech guy. And Byfuglien checked him into the boards. And that's caused pandemonium. And Byfuglien dropped it. I mean, that to me, I think, cemented Dustin Byfuglien as the fan favorite here in Winnipeg. But just because that opening shift. I happened to watch the video because there was an article about the top moments in you know, for the Jets over the last decade. So I was looking at that video and I thought to myself, like, you could just feel it. Like, just being, it felt like I was back in the building at that time. And to me, I think that goes down, no question, as one of the top moments of the decade.
The 2018 whiteout, the year the Jets, of course, went to the Western Conference Final against the Golden Knights. That year and that run, the Jets winning, you know, the two rounds, that was amazing. But for me, probably what stands out, one of my favorite moments was 2015, mm-hmm. when the Jets got to the playoffs for the first time against the Ducks. Mm-hmm. They, of course, got swept that year. But just that first playoff game, Jets 2.0, to me was just incredible. Playoff hockey being back in Winnipeg. And unfortunately, you know, the Jets weren't able to, you know, get that series going and they lost the first two games. But, you know, they were really good in that series until game four, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, you remember the Jets were, you know, the party dangle and all of that. So that stands out to me. And obviously, you know, that entire year, 2011 was a magical year if you were a Winnipegger, right? If you were someone who grew up with Jets 1.0, or if you were a kid who never grew up with NHL hockey.
That's right.
And the Jets returned and it was just an unbelievable year for the city and the province. Quickly, Dave, we're up against the break. We're going to be joined by Lou Korak of NHL.com, covers the St. Louis Blues next segment. But I want to get your other two stories here quickly, your top stories, your other two, because obviously the Jets return to Winnipeg was number one. But what were your other top two stories of the decade?
The other one, you touched on it briefly, was the Jets making it farther than any other Jets team had ever done before. I think, you know, fans in the city were, 2015 was amazing, Ezzy, because just the whiteout return and just seeing the building just completely engulfed in white. And more than that, actually, what I loved the most was the street party. And I loved how, I mean, again, this was before it kind of became zoned. And it was just free, and fans were, and by free, I mean like just carefree. And it was just the atmosphere outside the building was as electric as it was inside the building. And they created just this natural, organic, thing that was just remarkable. And I thought, to me, that more than anything about the playoffs, the games themselves, was the most remarkable, effect that I, you know, from one of the most impactful things in the last decade.
Okay, Dave M, quickly, what's number three? And then I'm going to give you my other two.
Okay, my last one for sure has to be 2010, Vancouver, the Olympics.
Yeah.
Canada, men, women, both winning gold in Canada. You know, and a buddy of mine, I remember, had bought, his name was Richard Tapper, he had bought tickets to the gold medal game before, obviously, at the beginning. And it was like watching the stock market. When Canada would lose, the ticket would go down to like almost like no value. Canada would win, suddenly it was like worth $1 million. And he, I remember him saying to me, what should I do? I said, you're all about experience. You got to go. And he went, and it was a phenomenal game. Obviously, the golden goal for the men, that was spectacular. I thought Jonathan Toews, actually, from Winnipeg, was the best player in the tournament overall. But, you know, I mean, that as a Canadian, a Canadian moment, I thought, was just iconic.
And shout out to the 2014 team as well,
yeah,
who won gold, because that team was almost as dominant. Carey Price, how many goals did he allow in that tournament? Two?
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
I really think he only allowed two goals. I'm going to give you my two moments here. Shawnee Assor is giving me the signal because we got to go to break. For me, one of the biggest stories of the decade was the Golden Knights. Entering the league in 2017-18, going all the way to the Stanley Cup final, obviously not winning the Stanley Cup. Washington won it that year, but just how the year went with the tragedy in Las Vegas with the terrible shooting, and then how Vegas and their fans rallied around that. So for me, the Golden Knights, obviously just entering the league and nobody really thinking they were even going to make the playoffs. They end up going on that magical run, obviously at the expense of the Winnipeg Jets. And for me, one of the biggest stories, I know people might think this is a little bit ridiculous, but the introduction of 3-on-3 overtime in 2015-16, this is the fifth year of 3-on-3 overtime. Anybody who's listened to the show knows that I hate the shootout. The shootout's been around now for, 14, 15 years, since 2005. But I think the addition of 3-on-3 overtime, and this really is fortuitous timing, because with the Jets and the Blues going to overtime last night, but I just think that has added such a great dynamic and made the extra period so much more exciting, mm-hmm. and obviously has reduced the amount of games that have gone to a shootout. So for me, 3-on-3 overtime has been a fantastic addition to hockey, and I do think that it should be 10 minutes of 3-on-3 overtime and we should scrap the shootout. We're going to head to break now. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Lou Korak, St. Louis Blues correspondent for NHL.com. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The two-man crew, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, Drew Mandel is on vacation. He will be back next week. A reminder, next Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show will be 7 in the morning, bright and early, till 10 a.m. because, of course, we've got the Jets in St. Paul, Minnesota against the Wild. Another 1 o'clock puck drop, so we're on early. 7 o'clock, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday, our first show of the new decade, first show of 2020. We're trying to get a hold of Lou Korak, St. Louis Blues correspondent for NHL.com. The Jets and the Blues meet tomorrow in St. Louis, 2 o'clock puck drop. The rematch, the second of four meetings. No, just going back to that game, just an amazing game. Again, you know, watching that game, that lived up to the hype. Because early on in that game, you know, the Jets go down and then they tie it up late, the Gabriel Bourque goal, and the Jets just kept fighting back. And that goal that Blake Wheeler scored in the third period to force that game to overtime, it didn't go the way the Jets wanted it to, obviously, with David Perron scoring the goal for the Blues and getting the extra point, Dave. But I think there is something to build off there for the Jets, because you went from basically a situation where you weren't going to get any points to at least getting a point and keeping pace with, you know, the Colorados and the Dallases and all those other teams. Minnesota gains a point, so the Wild are only 2 points behind the Jets, but that was a very significant point for the Jets last night.
No, there's no question about it. And the fact is, I mean, we talked about it in the first segment, Ezzy. I mean, this is one of the premier teams in the NHL. And you match them throughout the game, and yeah, you didn't dominate them, but you're not going to dominate a team that's as good as St. Louis and as a structure to St. Louis. So the fact that the Jets were able to hang with them, and again, we know that the Jets, especially when you have Perreault back, especially when you have Kopp back, you know, that's a real good top nine, and then you can augment your fourth line however you want. But the reality is that you've got a pretty significant group that can score some goals, but right now it's limited, right? We really look at that top six as the producers for this Jets team. And so when you are able to manufacture a point, because look, if you lose that point and then you've got Dallas, you know, right there, and you've got, like you said, Ezzy, Minnesota comes back. They were down 4-3 and end up beating Colorado 6-4. So the Wild are winning. You know, Nashville got pumped by Pittsburgh. But you've still got all these teams that are right in it. We talked about it. You know, the Jets have, 45 points. The Predators, who are I think, in seventh.
The Predators are at 42 points. Let's just go look at the standings for a second. Obviously, St. Louis is in first place with 56 points. They've got a nice seven point cushion. We mentioned the Wild are only 2 points behind the Jets. The Jets are still third place in the Central Division. But to me, what's most incredible is the difference between second place. I'm talking just about the Western Conference here, obviously. Mm-hmm. The difference between second place Colorado and 11th place Vancouver is 7 points.
It's crazy.
You've got eight teams that are within 7 points. You've got nine teams that are within 7 points.
Good thing your dad isn't a math professor.
It's really crazy. And the Minnesota Wild are the big surprise, obviously, because of the start that they had.
Yeah.
But, you know, you mentioned the Dallas Stars are right there. The Minnesota Wild are right there. And the Colorado Avalanche, that game coming up on New Year's Eve is obviously, you know, there could be, you know, that's what they call the old 4-point game, right? The 4-point swing, right? Because, you know, the Jets want to keep pace with Colorado. Realistically, they're not going to catch St. Louis.
No, they're 11 points behind.
It's not going to happen.
No.
So you want to keep pace with Colorado, but you also don't want Dallas and Minnesota to get even closer. You're 1 point and 2 points up on those two teams. So
you can feel them breathing on the back of your neck right now.
Absolutely. It's a log jam. So, you know, let's go back to what you talked about earlier, though, that third line, you know, and Matty Perreault. What would you say, Dave, realistically? I know you don't know the answer to this, but realistically, if you had to put a percentage on the chances of Matty Perreault coming back, do you think it's good or do you think it's more realistic that he comes back Tuesday against Colorado?
Yeah, you're right, and it's a good question, and the reality is we'll know probably a little bit better in about an hour and 20 minutes because the Jets are going to be practicing before they take off for St. Louis. So my guess is that we'll have a pretty good indication, you know, because they're obviously not going to skate tomorrow because it's a 2 o'clock start in St. Louis. So we'll get an idea as to line rushes, and we'll see if Matthew Perreault is in them. So then really we'll know, and if you want, you can go to LegalCurve.com. We'll have all the information for you there. But I would think that this is the part that's confusing. If he was a possibility for Montreal, you know, and then you said, well, no, he wasn't. So then we held him out, and he wasn't a factor for the St. Louis game. He got in his skate yesterday. Again, today he'll get a practice in. My thinking is if he's good enough for today's practice and he gets through it all right, then they're going to want to have him in. Because you know what? The reality is, again, we talked about it before, you tread water with the other guys. Matthew Perreault is a bit of a difference maker for that third line. So that's really what you're going to need to see.
Dave, I want to talk a little bit about the Moose. I just got a text from Lou Korak. He's going to join us last segment to obviously preview tomorrow's game between the Jets and the Blues. I want to quickly get in a little Moose talk here.
Sure.
Because you were covering Moose practice yesterday. There were a whole bunch of injury updates from Pascal Vincent. Obviously, Sammy Niku made all the headlines.
Yeah.
He is going to play tomorrow afternoon. You broke that story. He's going to play tomorrow for the Manitoba Moose. He's also obviously going to play Tuesday because it's a couple of home games coming up here for the Moose against the Rockford IceHogs, their divisional rival. But there are also some updates on Christian Vesalainen. There were some updates on Ryan White, Peter Stojkovic. I'm probably forgetting
Luke Green.
A few players here. Luke Green, you just mentioned.
Yeah.
How important is it to get Sammy Niku back into the lineup? Because obviously the Manitoba Moose are also in a dogfight for a playoff spot.
Yeah, and the Moose have been, they were red hot in November, similar to the Jets, and they stumbled a little bit in December, and they didn't have the best road trip when they went down south. But, you know, getting Sammy Niku back, he hasn't played since the game was November 27th in Milwaukee. So he's been out. He left the game in the second period. So he'll be a huge boost. And he talked yesterday after practice how he feels healthy and he's ready to go. And he has that characteristic Sammy Niku confidence. So fans will be happy to see that, see him back in a Manitoba Moose jersey. Christian Vesalainen played last Sunday when they were playing the Rampage, and it was an interesting game. He basically left in the first period, came back, left in the second period, did not come back, and didn't play in the third period. So after the game, I asked Coach Pascal Vincent what his status was. He didn't have an update on him at that moment, but yesterday in practice, I'm told, I wasn't there, but I'm told that he was in a regular jersey. So Christian Vesalainen most likely should be good for the game. Ryan White, veteran, he went for a big hit against Grand Rapids early in November, and against Smith, I think. Anyways, he went, he's been out since that point, and he's finally back, and so that's a good thing, because he's a good veteran present, very good on the PK. Problem for them is losing Luke Green. He's been, you know, he's had a real problem staying healthy That's his biggest issue right now, is being able to play consistently. Obviously, now Pascal Vincent said he's going to be week to week. It's not good news for him. Peter Stoykovich, captain of the Manitoba Moose, he had missed a bunch of games. His last game was in Toronto when they went on that kind of longer road trip. And he hasn't played since, I think it was that second game against the Marlies. And now Pascal Vincent yesterday said he too will be week to week. So you're not going to be without those two defensemen. But getting Sammy Niku back, that's going to be massive. So that's a good thing.
The Manitoba Moose host the Rockford IceHawks tomorrow at 2 o'clock, puck drop. And then on Tuesday, of course, the New Year's Eve game, Dave, that you mentioned earlier, the Moose are going to host the Rockford IceHawks. Note the start to that game is 4 o'clock. So it's a nice New Year's Eve time. You know, you're going to get to go watch the game and then continue on with your NYE festivities. Let's head to break now. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Lou Korak, St. Louis Blues correspondent for the NHL.com. And we're going to preview tomorrow afternoon's game between the Jets and the Blues. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
We're back. Final segment here on a Saturday morning of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's head right to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
All right, Lou, we've got you now. Lou Korak, St. Louis Blues correspondent for NHL.com. Thanks so much for joining us, Lou. And I have to mention this before we get into the interview. You are our final guest of the decade.
Oh, wow.
You know, so no pressure, Lou.
Well, I apologize for that.
Lou, we got to start with yesterday's game between the Jets and the Blues. The Blues come out with obviously the 5-4 win in overtime. The Jets killer David Perron gets the game winning goal on that giveaway by Mark Scheifele. David Perron is on pace for a career year. He might go as high as 80 points this year. Just is this just another veteran player on this Blues team? Because we know they're full of great veteran players like Ryan O'Reilly, Alex Petrangelo, Jay Bomeister, Jaden Schwartz. I mean, the list goes on. But is this just a player who's comfortable in his own skin and he's picking up right where he left off last year?
100%. And really, they have to be because, I mean, you don't take a Vladimir Tarasenko out of your lineup and just say, okay, we're just going to skip a beat here and no big deal. You know, I mean, you're talking about a guy that's, you know, perennial 35, 40 goal scorer every year. And, you know, you're talking about 80, 85 points a year or, you know, wherever he's at. And usually he's at the top of the list when it comes to this team. So, you know, you don't take that with a grain of salt. So it's got to be next man up. And I know it's a cliche and you hear teams talk about it all the time, but somebody's going to have to pick that slack up, and it's not going to be one guy. I mean, the way this team plays, the way this system is structured, that's just not going to happen. So everybody to a man's got to pick up a little by little here, and to me, David Perron's just grabbing a big chunk of this and taking it. I mean, you're right. This is going to be the way he's going right now, and there's still a long way to go. It's a career year for him, and you know, it's third stint with the Blues. Listen, he likes St. Louis. He, one way or another, he winds up coming back here. And one way or another, Doug Armstrong seems intent on bringing him back and feels like that, you know, he could be a glue guy and a missing piece to what they're looking for. And, you know, he's been the one that's really jumped up the charts here since Tarasenko has gone down to that injury and quite possibly for the, you know, entire regular season here. We don't know that yet. But darn near close to it. So, you know, the way he's going, he's confident. I mean, they're putting him in situations that he necessarily hasn't played in the past. And I think he's just taking it and running with it. And, I mean, it's just that veteran experience. I mean, you know, I remember when Perron got drafted here, you know, he was just a young buck and kind of like a lot of skill guys. You know, you have to learn how to be a two-way player. And in this system, if you're going to play for the St. Louis Blues, you're going to have to be a two-way guy, and he's really embraced that, especially here under Craig Berube, and he's really taken off with it.
You know, Lou, we know where the St. Louis Blues were last year and at this time, and of course they went on to win the Stanley Cup championship, and now nobody's being caught by surprise by this team, but, you know, it's a different mantle now to be the Stanley Cup, defending Stanley Cup champion into the season, but these guys haven't missed a beat. So how have they done that? How have they, you know, is it the coaching or obviously the players on the ice, but what has it allowed this team to kind of change from a team that nobody really expected to be, you know, in that fight to a team now that's, again, looking like they could repeat as defending Stanley Cup champions?
I think it's just, like you said there, you know, with Craig Berube, I think it's a reflection of their coach who doesn't let these guys get too high. I mean, they're really good no matter what. And I mean, they're on a 7-game winning streak right now. But I guarantee you when they hit the ice here at noon that Craig Berube is not going to want these guys to dwell on this stuff. It's turn the page. Let's move on. Okay, last night's over and done with. It was a wild and crazy game back and forth, but it's over. We got the 2 points. Let's move on. And the players have really embraced that. They're very humble by what's gone on, and I think they've handled it very well. And you're right. To be honest with you, I had gone into the season wondering around December, January, you know, you may still be on that high in October and November of winning it all, but come December and January, you know, when the grind really starts to hit you, because this team is, let's face it, they played a lot of hockey in this calendar year. I mean, it took them 26 games to win it all in the playoffs. That's a lot of hockey and a lot of mileage on a lot of these players, but they've handled it so far so well, and you have to give them credit. And has it been easy? No, because they know they're going to get everybody's best. And, you know, normally whenever I, you know, hit opposing dressing room, that's what they talk about. It's like, hey, this is the barometer of the league right now. These guys have what everybody else wants. And right now the Blues are pretty reluctant on giving it away to somebody else. If you're going to take it from them, you're going to have to earn it. And that's just kind of the mantra that they've put themselves on. And so far, they've handled it with flying colors here.
We're joined by Lou Korak of NHL.com on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. And, you know, the go-ahead goal in the third period by Tyler Bozak, just a really nifty pass by Robert Thomas. And, you know, I wanted to ask you about that third line with Robert Thomas and Tyler Bozak, Alex Steen, and just the depth on this team. I thought Ivan Barbashev looked really impressive. Jacob De La Rose was picked up this year. Mackenzie McEachern, who obviously came up through the American Hockey League. But, you know, this team, even with some injuries, and we know that other teams are dealing with injuries as well. The Jets are without, you know, Andrew Kopp, Matty Perreault, Brian Little right now, but it just continues to amaze me, Lou, how impressive the depth is on this team. And when somebody goes out, it's just like there's somebody ready made to come up and fill that spot.
Well, 100%. And I'm not going to say that the Blues are the model here of doing this and it's the exact blueprint, but they're right up there. I mean, it's a testament to how important depth is. And I know that, you know, depth is a word that can be taken for granted a lot, and teams talk about it, you know, your fan base talks about it, as long as we got a couple guys here and there, we'll be okay. Well, you know, they have, this has been a team this year that's already had more injuries here than they did all of last year, and not many teams would be able to absorb the kind of hits that they have. And you know, you're witnessing it up there with Winnipeg right now, and they're handling it very well right now. But over the long haul, you need guys that are just going to step in and not necessarily pick up where the injured guys left off, but just do your job. And that's all that Craig Berube asks of these guys. He doesn't ask guys to come into the lineup and say, okay, you have to come in now and you're going to have to give us the production that Tarasenko gives us, or you're going to have to give us the production that a Sammy Blais was giving us. No, just go in and do your job and everything else will fall into place. And they have had guys that have really been able to step in. And, you know, you mentioned De La Rose. Mackenzie McEachern's game has really taken off, guys. I'll be honest with you. I've written about him here. And, this is a guy that they've drafted, somebody that's kind of been one of those players in waiting. And he didn't get a sniff in the playoffs last year. But you know what? He learned a lot from watching those guys play. And Robert Thomas is really blossoming into his own. And I think, fans of the NHL are getting a really good glimpse of why the St. Louis Blues took this guy. And he's making players around him better now. And, you know, Tyler Bozak's got 4 goals in his last 5 games. And it's no coincidence with Robert Thomas on his line. You know, De La Rose has been one of those guys that's fit in. They haven't asked him to come in and play a top-six role. They just want him to do his job. And I think that's just a testament to what these guys have been able to do. And, you know, and they ask not to do too much, and that's all you can really ask for. And right now, the record really speaks for itself.
Lou, thanks for joining us. Sorry, we're going to have to cut you off. We're at the end of the show here, but, we appreciate you joining us. You're the last guest of the decade, which is obviously an extreme honor. The rematch between the Jets and the Blues goes tomorrow, 2 o'clock puck drop, live from St. Louis, the second of four meetings between the Jets and the Blues. This rivalry, I mean, we were talking about this off air a couple of years ago. The best rivalry going was the Jets and the Predators, but you know, now it seems like the Jets and the Blues, that's the best rivalry going in the Central Division. It should be another really good game tomorrow afternoon. Lou, thanks as always for joining us, and we look forward to talking to you in the new decade.
Thank you for having me, and Happy New Year to you guys.
Happy New Year to you as well, Lou. Lou Korak, St. Louis Blues correspondent for NHL.com. Big thanks for him for joining us on the show. That's going to do it for us. Should mention that this segment of the show was brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place at Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For a list of performers and showtimes, go to rumorscomedyclub.com. We want to thank our guests this morning, Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press, Stephen Wino of the Associated Press, and you just heard Lou Korak. It was a little bit rushed, but he is the St. Louis Blues correspondent for NHL.com. Big thanks to Dave, talking a little bit more than he usually does. Obviously, I was as well. Usually not hosting, but Drew Mandel will be back next week. We'll be live at 7 o'clock in the morning for an early edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next decade. Have a great weekend, everybody.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.